Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast with host Ralph Malbro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of The Team Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Which four of you would survive the longest in the zombie apocalypse, and in which order would you die?
Well, Ralph, no offense, you're going first.
Oh, definitely. No.
The zombies would smell Dave's sugar blood and target him.
They'd get his...
I don't even have a joke, Dave smells like nougat.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
All right, welcome to Saints Happy Hour Podcast. As always, we are sponsored by you, the fan. Donate if you can. We're going to give you the drunk histories. We're going to give you a bunch. We gave you the bonus episode in October, but we're going to give you two drunk histories in November to make up for the one we didn't get to in October. If you can't donate, at least go to iTunes and give us a nice, juicy five-star review. That'll help us out a lot. All right, the Saints are 6-2. They are skull-dragging teams, and they're not even, like, playing A-plus games, Andrew. What world are we in? Like, I felt like they played pretty good against Tampa, but I wasn't like, oh, my God, they're clicking on all cylinders. I was like, yeah, they're just...
Yeah, I don't really think they were.
No.
That's the incredible part about this, is they win 30-10. They cry. I said last week, you know, if the Saints are serious about making the playoffs, they're playing a weak opponent with a battered quarterback that hasn't been playing well. They're playing at home. Like, if they're serious about winning the division, making the playoffs, whatever, they need to crush the Bucs. And while they did that, there still was like, I mean, I'll put it to you this way. You look at the Eagles, you look at the Rams, who have kind of come out there and stated, like, we're the best teams in the NFC. And they solidified that with huge wins.
Yeah, but Philadelphia had four touchdowns that didn't go 20 yards.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, they're putting up 50 and 40 points.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to ask me, you know, why didn't the Saints do that? I think if you add up the blocked extra point, the missed field goal, the fumble by Kamara, the dropped punts, you take away all that stuff, and that's how they go from winning 30-10 to like 48-3.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, honestly, like, they clean up some stuff. They're beating bad teams like 48-3, and that's what they were doing in 2009. So when Bree says there's still room to grow, I believe that. Now, that said, they have that many mistakes and they're still winning 30-10. I think that tells you just how good this team can be. And I mean, you take away the mistakes, still, I feel like this was a statement game for the Saints, that they're for real and this is going to be a fun season.
And Dave, how was the atmosphere at the Dome?
It was good. I mean, everybody, you know, it always helps when the Saints get off to a good start. You got a big play, like a blocked punt. And obviously, that's going to keep everybody interested. I thought everybody was loud. I thought everybody was good. I think everybody realizes that things are starting to feel a little special. So,
yeah, I mean,
you know what's weird is, like, we're used to the offense being better than this.
Yeah.
And so it's weird because they're 6-2. They're as good as they've ever been in terms of record. You know, they're right up there with all those teams that made the playoffs. But this is probably the worst we've ever seen the offense be. They're still good. They're still putting up points and yards. But I think it's hard for some fans to get around, like, how could they be winning when Drew hasn't been that great and the offensive line is meh and the receivers aren't playing that well?
I feel like the offensive line, considering they've been battered with injuries, has been pretty good.
No, that's fair. But I'm just saying, I think we're used to the offense – we're used to the team losing despite having the number one offense. And so it's just interesting how they've maybe dropped to like the seventh or eighth best offense. I mean, I don't know where they rank, but I'm just saying if you look at it based on the eye test, I mean, they're not killing defenses like the Eagles are right now or the Rams, but they don't really need to.
Yeah, they win. They, They aren't like vintage Saints offensive like 2011, 2012, no. Even 2012. It gets sucked in the memory hole because the defense was so atrocious. That offense in 2012 rolled.
Yeah, but they have better balance now, and it's a little bit of a shock. I'm saying it's like a shock to the system. Fans aren't used to this. They're like, oh, wow, like if you have balance, our offense actually doesn't need to be that good.
Well, this is a good question, Dave. When do you, as a Saints fan, look at the Saints and be like, okay, this is what they are. They're not really going to get a lot better on defense. They're not going to get a lot better on offense. Defense, offense, especially. This is kind of what they are. When do you, as a fan, like make that decision? Like, how long does it take you to be like, this is what they are, this is what I expect, and this is how it's going to be going forward? Like, have you made that decision with the Saints yet this year? Like, the defense is going to be really good.
I mean, we're halfway through the season, so
yeah, I think we're there.
I mean, it is what it is at this point.
Yeah.
You know, the defense, I think, is playing as good as they're ever going to play. I don't think they're going to get any better. I mean, I think Andrew just said it's possible that...
Saints are second in yards per game on offense, by the way.
Yeah. Well, but the one stat that they are really good in is the point differential. I think they're fourth in the entire league.
That's pretty damn good.
I mean, that's a key stat. I mean, that means you're holding your opponents to few scores and you're scoring a whole bunch yourself.
They're sixth in points, by the way. Like, we're bitching and complaining about the offense. We're like, it's not that good. It's not what we're used to.
You're bitching. I'm not bitching sixth. And complaining.
And they're seventh in running the ball, by the way.
But I won my 48-3 win, goddammit, Ralph.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I think obviously this is what it is. This is the defense. The defense is what it is, and the offense is what it is. But at the same time, I feel like the offense does have the potential to you might get one of those games where they just roll and they just steamroll and they just come out firing and can put up 48 points. They certainly have that capability, but they don't seem to be a team of the past where they would do that every single game.
If they didn't kind of cave in the second half of the third quarter against Detroit and Carolina, they were close. And I'd say even Tampa, you know, they hit a couple of those plays and they were close to being gangbusters in a few games.
Yeah, but keep in mind that, you know, a lot of those Saints teams, they were 7-9, 8-8. They were playing from behind a lot. They were having to pass a lot, especially in the second half. They don't have to do that this season, so they're not.
And they're running the hell out of the ball.
And that was the other thing too. I mean, yesterday in the dome, I was like that. There was that maybe the second drive or whatever. I mean, they just kept running it, and I was just like, I've never seen them. Dedicated to the run. I mean, they almost.
That's a good point. Maybe they're just different.
Yeah. I think they're different. Here's the thing, Dave. Your boyfriend, Mark Ingram, he is on pace to have the most.
Kamara is my new boyfriend because he's on my fantasy team. And I also played the Saints D yesterday. I fucking crushed it.
Yeah, I did too.
I'm now 7-2.
I haven't played the Saints D in fantasy in like 7 years.
They're like a top five defense.
Yeah. I'm retarded. I played them versus Carolina and Miami, and I cut them for some reason because I'm an idiot.
Because of the bye week?
Yeah, I was dumb. It was stupid. But here's the thing. Mark Ingram is on pace to have the most carries and most yards rushing ever by a Sean Payton running back. He's on pace to have more carries than Deuce in 2006, and he's on pace to have like 120 more yards than Deuce in 2006. I mean,
yeah, it's amazing.
This is a monster team. We got to get into a couple things about the game.
Dave, mute yourself if you're not talking, damn it.
Dave is at Cooter Brown's getting hammered on a Monday because that's how we do it.
I have a quick comment about Jameis Winston. Am I allowed to do that?
Go ahead.
It just has never been more clear to me that team will never win with Jameis Winston as their quarterback. I just look at him. And all you have to do is listen to his pregame talking about eating a W. And the best part of it is he goes, who wants to get a W tonight? He specifies tonight when kickoff was at noon.
Details mattered.
Yeah. Details. But I just think you look at him and you look at how his teammates are responding to the idiocy that he's putting out there. And it just dawned on me. It's like, if he gets hot and he's playing well, then his teammates will get excited and it'll be fun. But anytime the going gets tough, or, you know, you've got to stay bonded together. I mean, how many times have the Saints been 0-4? I mean, how many times have we seen them stick together and kind of persevere through?
And that's Breeze.
Knowing they had a pretty mediocre to terrible team.
Well, that's all.
And finding a way to fight. And, like, I just don't think Jameis Winston is ever going to inspire offensive linemen to block for him. I mean, they're professionals. They'll try. He's just not a winner.
It's never been more clear to me. But he is.
Hey, being vocal does not necessarily mean that people are buying the message.
Dave, Devontae Harris was public enemy number one after like 3 weeks. But I feel like yesterday when he just went in there and was blasting people.
That was awesome.
When Marshawn Lattimore needed him. Like, I feel like the fans just have like an outpouring of love. I think he deserved a game ball. Am I wrong, Dave?
I didn't see that. I mean, you're talking about like he wasn't actually playing in the game. He was just got involved in that brawl.
He was on special teams though, right? He was on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think and so, you know, you saw Mike Evans drill Lattimore, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then after he drills Lattimore, then he gets on top of him, and he cocks back like he's about to punch him in the face. Like, it looks like he's about to try to start a brawl. And right before he can land a punch, he just gets annihilated by Devontae Harris. Comes in and just, like, human-bodied missile just, like, launches himself at Evans to knock him off Lattimore.
Two things. Lattimore is the Saints' most valuable
player. Was it a good tackle? Did he wrap him up good?
Oh, it was excellent.
Lattimore is the Saints' most valuable player, not named Drew Brees. And second of all, Devontae Harris, he's boys with Mike Evans because they went to Texas A&M together, but he didn't give a fuck yesterday. He was in there, right. Boy. He's like, that's my boy. We had a ride. You know? So, I mean, Devontae Harris...
It was a bullshit move by Evans. But I'm sure he's going to get fined by the league. I'm sure he's going to get a letter from the league.
But here,
I mean, even Winston could potentially get a fine. I mean, there was no reason. He wasn't even in the game at that point. There's no reason he should be touching a Saints player.
Andrew,
I can't believe I'm saying this, but if you were to ask me right now to name the top three players on the Saints, I might say number one, Cam Jordan, number two, Lattimore, number three, Breeze.
I would maybe flip-flop Lattimore and Jordan, but otherwise, yeah.
So you would say Lattimore's the best player on the team?
Possibly.
Yeah. I mean, like, I would maybe put those guys, at this point, ahead of Breeze in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, you can't... It's like the NFL, it's like the NFL when they count down the 100. You know, you could easily put quarterbacks 1-12 because, you know, Aaron Rodgers gets hurt or Breeze gets hurt. Yeah, but if you just go on how they're playing, I mean, here's the thing. One last thing on Devontae Harris. You know, we joke about guys that just understand their role and their place. I gotta say, man, we joke about it, but Devontae Harris, like, that's why he's on the team, dude, because he'll do anything. He has special teams. He struggles at corner, but he'll play all the special teams. And if you need to brawl, he's ready to go. You know?
Yeah, because we're cool with Devontae Harris getting ejected if need be.
Yeah, and you know what?
He'll suck dick for coke.
You know? I don't know if you know this, Dave, but I do rock. I smoke rocks. This seat, like, Andrew, like, what have
you
they...
You got any more of that playing time?
Well, what, like, if we look at their offseason, like, pretty much nothing went wrong except Nick Fairley having a heart condition. And Andrew, you know...
And Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, but, yeah.
That, and even that, they got a draft pick for.
Yeah, so, I mean, but here's the thing, you know, and one, you know, we joked about the Malcolm Butler thing not working out, but, you know, and we kind of... I'll admit, I thought it was crazy at the time, You know, because the draft, they do the first round, and then they do the first round the first day, and then they only do it that night. So you have like a whole day of like teams wanting to do trades and all. And remember, this the thing was, the Saints in New England were still talking about Butler, and then they were like, it's off, because the Saints are like, this draft, the first 110 guys are awesome, and we think it's super deep on defense, and we're not giving New England a top 100 pick for Malcolm Butler. And at the time, I was like, that's fucking insane. No player that you're going to get in the top 100 is going to be better than Butler. What the fuck are you doing?
Also, in fairness, you weren't trusting their evaluation of the draft talent based on history.
Yeah, that's true. But they were. Yeah. What my point is, they were 100% right. Like,
yeah,
they were. You know,
listen. I mean, you look at the offseason. First of all, I really like the pickup of Okafor, and I told you I thought he could be this good, and you know that was a hit.
Yeah,
so
but he's
that's
better
huge.
Than he's better than even I think you hoped he would be.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, that's fair. I knew he could be this good. I just didn't know if he could stay healthy for a long stretch. You know, that was the main thing, is he battled injuries. But I really thought going back to a D end in a 4-3 was a good spot for him. You know, I thought he would work if he could stay healthy. But, you know, Warford has been great up until he got hurt. And so that was a good pickup. The free agents have been solid. You know, I think with the exception of Peterson, there's been some good moves. But, man, I just don't think in my wildest dreams. I mean, if you told me basically that Kamara from day one would be better than Sproles, basically. I mean, at this point, like, he might be better than Sproles in terms of what Sproles did for the Saints offense. And he's at least in the conversation. And then
he's in the conversation. You know, I don't know about 2011 Sproles.
If you told me that Lattimore was basically Revis in his prime,
that's more accurate. Because
you told me Hendrickson would already have a couple sacks, and you told me that Anzalone would start the first five games, and you know, can have some good moments, and you told me that Marcus Williams would have a circus pick. And be one of the team leaders in tackles.
Kinkaha has three sacks, and he's not even active every week.
And who's I'm forgetting a rookie. Oh, and that Ramchick would start every game and be pretty good. I would tell you, you're nuts. Like, there's no way I would have expected this class to perform like this their first year in the league. I have never seen, like, even the 2006 class. It took Streif a long time to figure it out. Yeah. You know, it took before he was starting and playing. Reggie Bush's first year was not nearly as good as Kamara.
Well,
I mean, he was very up and down.
Well, here's the thing though. Reggie Bush had just like a 1,296 total yards receiving and rushing. But he didn't have nearly the touchdown. Like, he only had two receiving touchdowns and six rushing touchdowns, and yeah, four of those rushing.
He made some plays on special teams,
he
though.
Made,
he had
made
a, he, had play. A
he made some plays, but Bush, at this point in his career, as a rookie, the first half of the season was averaging 2.8 yards per carry. Kamara is averaging over six.
Yeah. Well, here's a fun question, Dave. Reggie Bush had 1,296 total yards from scrimmage. Kamara is on pace for 1,300. Is Kamara going to beat the Reggie Bush total for 2006?
Yeah, probably. Kamara seems to only be getting better. I mean, he's just nobody can take him down. It's just like, you know, he catches that screen pass.
He's so good at setting up his blockers.
Yeah, I mean, and you just every time he touches the ball, he could is potentially a scoring play, even if the Saints are on their own 30-yard line.
You know,
I feel like he's getting more comfortable cutting it, running routes.
Yeah, you know who he reminds me of, and this is going to sound like a weird comparison, but Andrew, he reminds me a little of one of your all-time favorite Saints, Dalton Hilliard. If Dalton Hilliard had like a V8 engine, like he's got
better speed. Yeah,
he's got that slitheriness that just, you know, Dalton Hilliard when he was healthy.
Dalton
and right.
was very good. Yeah, Dalton was very good at when he would get hit. And Pierre Thomas had this too, although he didn't have the speed. But Hilliard, when he would get tackled, he had that incredible fluid balance where he could put a hand on the ground and just kind of pop back up and get extra yards.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I was going to say Kamara, the Kamara is Kamara is elusive like Pierre Thomas was. Like he's the balance thing is that hits home for me.
What's the
He just seems to, and he just seems to glide out there. He doesn't run. He it's like he's on ice skates on ice, and everybody else is not. Everybody
I
else
cannot
is
believe
feet.
That guy fell to the third round. I can't believe.
Everybody else is out there with lead shoes, and he's out there on ice and skates. He just kind of just slides. He just kind of slides out there. It's wild.
The funny thing is, the Saints picked him at what, 76.
Yeah.
And they traded – basically, the swap that they did for with San Francisco was San Francisco said, we'll give you 76. You give us your 2018 second-round pick. San Francisco
– and a fourth, right? Didn't they give a second and a fourth or just a second?
Just a second.
Oh, okay.
And basically, San Francisco's thinking –
that was a no-brainer.
San Francisco's thinking they picked 11, so that means they're going to pick 45-ish in the second round. Basically, right now, the Saints are going to pick like – probably 58-57.
That's probably one of the only trade ups ever that worked out well.
Like the Saints basically
besides Morstead, maybe.
You know, like the Saints gave up basically nothing for Kamara, which is just ridiculous. And Dave, what's the sort of balance that you think is good for these running backs? Because I was arguing with people on Twitter today that, like, I want Kamara to get more carries and I want him to be the lead back. But, like, what's the balance that you do you like the balance that they have now where Ingram's sort of the main guy and Kamara is the second guy? Because Kamara's on pace for, like, 175 total touches.
How could fans want to change a damn thing?
Hey, man.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say. I wouldn't touch, Andrew Neal.
Hell no.
I wouldn't make any change at all.
Do these people want to get Kamara injured?
I think Kamara's going to – over under on Kamara touches would be probably like 170. Do you think he'll get more total touches than that, Andrew?
What's he at now?
That feels about right.
He's on pace for 175.
Yeah, total. Now that feels about right. I mean – I think some games he'll touch, you know, they'll throw more and he'll just get more catches and stuff. And there'll be some games where maybe he only gets 5 to 7 touches. But I just think, you know, Ingram's kind of the power guy. He's the bell cow. He's the guy that gets you the tough yards. And, you know, Kamara's a little bit more of a gimmicky guy, you know, that creates mismatches and that sort of thing. And I think over the years, you've looked at when the Saints have been their best, and whether it's been Deuce McAllister and Reggie Bush tandem, or Pierre Thomas and Bush, or Pierre Thomas and Sproles, you know, they've kind of always had these two running backs that are very different that complement each other really well. And this fits the bill, man.
Yeah, the thing that's really crazy about Kamara, Dave, is I feel like whenever he's running, like he's not going full speed. Like, I feel like he's going fast enough to where no one can catch him, but I'm yet to see him, like, really
the
put
top end.
Yeah, like the top end. Like, and that's crazy to me. Like, you know, even Bush at this point, like, in Sproles, like, you had plays where you're like, yeah, that's the top end on a punt return for Sproles or Bush or whatever. Like, that's crazy. Like, I think he's going to go over 175 touches, Andrew, and I'm going to tell you why. I think they're morphing into this run-the-ball defensive team. And I think Sean Payton is getting to where he's confident enough to where, like Dave said at the beginning of the game, they're not afraid to bang it around on the run and punt the ball, you know?
Yeah.
Which, you know, the last 3 years they've been petrified because their defense was 31, 31, 32 in DVOA or any kind of rankings you want to do. Dave, the special teams were kind of a mess. Let's start with the trick play. I can't remember the name that they called it, but they had Tommy Lee Lewis lay down in the end zone, and I saw it in the team. I was like, he's laying down. I can see it. Tampa can see it. And then, dude, it was again who threw the bounce. He threw a grounder to him. They were lucky it wasn't a fucking catastrophe. Did you catch it at first?
I did not notice Tommy Lee Lewis laying down in the end zone. I didn't know it was a trick play until Ginn decided to lateral it and a poor one at that. You know, I think what happens is, I mean, they don't run these plays very often. I'm sure they don't practice them very often.
I'm sure they practice that during the week.
Yeah, they practice it, but they don't practice it often.
Yeah, maybe not.
And, you know, and you get nervous. And Ginn is obviously not a quarterback as a career. That's just a side gig. And I think you get nervous. And when the pressure is really on, you know, you don't make your best throw and you don't make your best play.
Well,
you know, I'm always down for that's what I like about Peyton. He's always willing to try that kind of shit. And you know what? Sometimes it works. And the Saints were up, and it, you know, the Saints pretty much had control of this game the entire time. So, you know, it's like, hey, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, no harm. And if it does work,
it could have been,
you know, maybe
it could have been a lot of harm. It could have, if they're lucky, it bounced him to him. But, Andrew, somebody, we'll do this question now. Skooks ask, should Tommy Lee, he lined up, he laid like horizontal in the end zone. Should he have gone into the T of the Saints in the end zone and lined up and laid down in the T? I think
Skooks, and laid vertically. Yeah. That way there's less that you can see.
Yeah, I think Skooks is right. I think it's poor. I think that was a poor planning, and the Saints missed that detail. I think if they'd had him lined up in the T, it could have worked, Andrew. I think it was.
Well, the throw still has to be made.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Even if Ginn had made that pass,
Tampa,
I still don't think he really had enough time.
Tampa was on it.
It wasn't like the field was. Yeah, it wasn't like there was tons of wide open field there in front of him.
Andrew, we talked about today on the phone when I was driving home from work. Are the Saints one more fumbled punt from signing Jarris Bird for $400,000, and we're just going to have a fair catch party for 7 weeks? is that where we're at? I know he's on Carolina, but they could cut him at any time. Sean Payton, just bring him back and be like, Jarris, you just do your thing, man. Just fair catch it.
And I mean, fair catch and catch it. Yeah.
I mean, are we almost there? I feel like if it's not Jarris Bird, it might be somebody else.
Can we bring Lance Moore out of retirement?
We could.
I mean, poor Willie Snead. I mean, that guy can't even fair catch.
He's not in the doghouse. He's buried in the yard.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. He's buried below the doghouse, 6 feet under. Yeah, I don't know what to say, man. They've got to be able to. It's like Sean Payton said. We're not even asking for a return in those situations. Just catch the ball. That's it.
I know Kamara is too valuable to the team at this point, but I sure would like to see him get a chance.
Isn't Kamara, though, isn't he kind of like...
I'm not sure he's a hands guy, though.
He's a punt guy, though, right? I mean, but is he like sort of like Reggie Bush, where the Saints in 2009, he didn't do it all the time, but he did it for special occasions, and he did it in the playoffs? You know?
I'd like to see him. You know, whenever the opponent is pinned far back, and you know it's one of those returnable situations.
I just feel like every time Bush got hurt, it was punt return.
It did feel.
And
like
Brandon Cooks broke his thumb on a punt return. I just think if you've got a guy that's valuable to the offense, don't freaking do it. Yeah. Don't put him in there.
I forgot about Brandon Cooks. You're 100% right. The failed experiment of let's have Brandon Cooks return punts.
And Bush was out with knee stuff twice because of a punt return.
Oh, you're right. Dave, you lose that argument. I forgot about the second Reggie Bush. You lose that argument.
I prefaced it by saying I understand Kamara is too valuable to this offense at this point.
Andrew, are we at critical point of offensive line injuries? I feel like I bought a liter of honey bourbon, and I feel like I'm gonna need it all, because I feel like there's no more they can survive offensive line. Like they're done, right? They have got.
Well,
to
just put in a waiver claim for Bryce Harris, so that tells you all you need to know. He's back on the team.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so you know they're one injury away from Bryce Harris playing, but I think if you look at the offensive line, I've always said, you know, this offensive line can sustain two injuries and be okay. Three, and they're in trouble. And now you're looking at Armstead maybe being out. Warford's out. Streif's out. So that's three. And if they're missing Armstead, it's a problem because now you've got Larrabias starting at left guard. Here's the thing. I think they're running the ball so well. Breeze gets the ball out so quickly. I think they're fine as long as the game is close or they're winning because the playbook is wide open. Sean Payton's been calling good plays. The offense, yeah, you saw it. Like the ball's getting out. Even when Larrabias was in there, I mean, I think the first three plays that Larrabias was in there, they had huge gains. And I joked on Twitter that the secret to the offense performing well was Larrabias being in there. But I think it's one of those things where, like, if you've got the defense thinking about so many things and their head swimming and you're in the lead or, you know, it's a close game and you're tied, the playbook's wide open. I think where they'll get in trouble is if they're down a couple scores and they're throwing every play. And then the offense is one-dimensional. The defense knows what to expect. Yeah. And then it just becomes about pass protection. I think then the offensive line is just not going to be good enough. Otherwise, I still think they're running the football well enough and Breeze is getting the ball out quick enough that they can still piece together an offense that's going to be successful even with Larrabias in there.
Have we heard anything on injuries today, Dave or Andrew? I haven't seen anything on
Vakar. No one's been put on IR. So, you know, the fact that they called up Bryce Harris means, you know, they're not sure about Armstead. You know, I think if the Saints are smart, honestly, I don't know what's going on with Armstead. I mean, I know he probably came back a little sooner than he should have because he wanted to play and, you know, because he heals quickly. But if I'm the Saints, listen, you're 6-2. You got the big NFC South win at home. You're playing an AFC team on the road in the cold. To me, this just feels like a game where you sit Armstead, even if he can play, because it's not the end of the world if you lose. And I think you got to think long term here. You're going to try to make a playoff run, try to win the division. And I think this is one you try to go without Armstead and see if you can win without him.
Yeah. Dave, how concerned are we about, damn it, excuse me, how concerned are we about these kick block situations with Lutz?
You know, I didn't rewatch the game, so I don't know. I'd have to ask you a question. I mean, was it a low kick,
no,
low trajectory?
Usually I always blame it on Lutz. Usually I always blame it on Lutz, but because he does have a low trajectory sometimes, but the edge blocking, really on the first field goal that Lutz made, I was shocked that it wasn't blocked because the guy coming off the edge was right there and he was able to get it up quick enough that he was fortunate and the field goal was good. But on the next extra point, it was the same thing, same guy, and he got around the edge again. And then on the
Who's assigned?
I don't know who it was, but on the next one, I noticed that Fleener was out there on off the edge, and clearly he was paying attention to it because someone picked it up. So then he kind of nudged the edge guy, and he kind of got a hand on him and slowed him down, and it was fine. But then later, there was another kick later in the game. I think it was on the missed field goal where they got edge pressure again. So I don't know what's going on. I mean, hopefully they'll clean that up this week. I'm sure they'll watch tape and get it figured out. But the edge pressure that the Bucs were getting was, I mean, unacceptable. They were getting way too close. Obviously on the block they got one, but there was a couple kicks besides that where it was way too close for comfort.
So there you go. So I'm not concerned about Lutz. I'm concerned about the protection.
Yeah. And Sean Payton said that. I mean, I haven't been paying attention before this game, really. But Sean Payton has come out in the media and said that he's been really unhappy with the field goal protection.
Yeah, like 2 weeks. Like, that was 2 weeks ago, he said.
Yeah.
That, you know, so, like, yeah. They've been – it's kind of lingering. And the thing is, like, you know, they were sort of unlucky last year. But if you keep getting kicks blocked, like, eventually, like, one of them's going to bounce wrong and it's going to be scooped and scored.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a play where, like, if you're in Buffalo and you might be losing 6-3 and you're lining up to kick a field goal to make it 6-6 in the middle of the second quarter, you get that shit blocked and it's 13-3. You're down two scores. The crowd's in it. It's halftime. Now your offensive line has to pass block, like you just said, Andrew. And suddenly it all fucking goes to shit because you couldn't.
You know, it makes me wonder. I mean, they kind of had a shit show this offseason with long snapper. You know,
I forgot. All the bad memories are washed away when you go 6-2.
Yeah. So then, you know, they bring in Justin Drescher and they're like, fine, we're just going to go with a guy from last year. And then he gets hurt. Then they trade for Darren Boss. He needs open heart surgery. So then they just get a guy at the last second. And I mean, I don't know anything about long snapping. As far as I can tell, he's fine. He hasn't missed any of his snaps, but I wonder if part of the issue might be because I know they time those guys and they time how quickly the ball gets from snap to holder. And it's, you know, we're talking about fractions of a second and, you know, it makes a big difference, you know, between the guys that are really quick and the guys that are, you know, maybe just a tick slower, and that gives the blocking unit more of a chance and more time to get there. And I just wonder with the musical chairs and the lack of consistency they've had, and kind of piecing it together. I mean, they literally did not have a long snapper. I think it was like 3 days before the opener. And so, I have no idea how good this guy is, but I wonder if that's part of the problem.
Dave, Kobe Fleener has 16 catches for 196 yards. Over under Kobe Fleener catches for the year, 30.
Under.
Under.
No, he'll get 30. He won't get 40.
He had 50 last year. He needs to grow his hair back.
But you know, honestly, I think Fleener's had a better year this year than last year. I know that sounds wild, but I think the Saints have kind of made him an afterthought. And so when he makes plays, I don't think they're forcing it to him. Yeah. You know, last year, like, he had more catches, but he also had more targets and a lot went wrong. And I think the times that Breeze is targeting Fleener, it's usually working.
Yeah. He's still got that. Oh my God. I
think he's way more efficient this year. I mean, I don't know that I keep him next year.
They're saving him for the playoffs.
Well, he's not doing enough to justify a salary, but I think from an efficiency standpoint, he's been more productive.
He would have had to be Jimmy Graham to justify his fucking salary.
Pretty much.
I mean,
or at least Ben Watson.
Yeah, I mean, you got to. He needed to, for what they were paying him. The Saints can generate 40 to 50 catches.
Overpaying him.
The Saints can generate 40 to 50 catches out of like a homeless guy at tight end. So for the Saints to pay the going rate for an average tight end, like, they don't need to do that. So, like, for Kobe Fleener, like, for him to justify that salary, he needed to catch, what, Andrew, 60?
50 balls.
Well, yeah. He caught 50, but 50, I mean, he needed to catch
60. They paid him more than the going rate. They paid him more than any other tight end that
year. Oh, no, that's not true. I mean, I think
Yes, it is. We've talked about this. Rate. You have already, Andrew, you have already forgotten the situation from last offseason. They overpaid him. They could have gotten him for, you know, $7 million a year, but they just fucking threw the money at him.
That's what he's making, $7 million a year.
Whatever he was making, then they could have paid him $5 million. But the market had been set already, and they paid him more than what the market had set. They just threw money at him like they didn't even need it. It was fucking ridiculous. I'm not in front of a fucking computer right now, but I can't look it up. But they did not have to pay him that much. If they wanted Fleener, they didn't have to be that aggressive. They could have paid him significantly less than what they paid him. They were just like, they just fucking threw money away. Like
Dave,
like,
when you
like
can,
I don't know that business. That's true.
I mean,
yes, it is. You have already fucking forgotten. Go back to our fucking podcast the week after they fucking signed him, and you fucking agreed with me then, and you should be agreeing with me now. You have fucking forgotten how stupid of a signing it was.
Ralph, are you going to corroborate this?
No, because I'm looking at the...
fuck you guys. I'm fucking looking this shit up tomorrow.
You guys
are both about to fucking catch a fucking shitstorm on Twitter tomorrow. You fucking idiots.
Well, here's the contract that's the comparison to Kobe Fleener is Vance McDonald. I got actually blocked by – he got 3 years, $19.5 million, which is what?
Jesus.
Which is what,
I mean, that's just crazy.
$6.3 million a year. And Kobe Fleener got seven.
Was that the same offseason?
Yes.
Yes, this all sounds familiar. And they paid Fleener more than that.
Yeah, but
what was McDonald's stats?
Vance McDonald has never caught 30 passes in his career.
Yeah, right. And Fleener had like 50 or 60,
like,
right?
Like 7 million is like the going rate for like a replacement level average tight end.
Yeah.
But the argument for Fleener is that the Saints don't need to pay. They didn't need to pay him $7 million because they got Billy Miller 50 catches. They got David Thomas 40 catches. They got 100-year-old Ben Watson 70 something catches. Like, they just didn't need to do it because they got Mr. Jessica Simpson caught 50 something balls. You know,
I can't believe there's not some rookie they can draft at that position would be better than Kobe Fleener.
Yeah, like that was the argument of Fleener. But I mean, we get kind of sidetracked, but I think Fleener might.
Maybe if they hadn't been so fucking petty about whether Jimmy Graham was a fucking wide receiver or a tight end, he'd still be on this fucking team catching 80 fucking balls a season.
Poor Jimmy Graham.
I would love to have Jimmy Graham.
Poor Jimmy Graham is stuck in Seattle.
You want to talk about the offense being unstoppable this year. If they had kept Jimmy Graham, if they hadn't pissed Jimmy Graham off to no end, they might have still had him.
Would you rather have Max Unger or Jimmy Graham on this offense right now, though?
I would rather have Max Unger.
I would, too, because the offensive line without Unger, if you put in like...
Yeah, see, I think this offense is worse with Jimmy Graham and without Unger.
Yeah, I mean, here's an interesting question that somebody asked.
I don't watch the tape as much, you know, but the one thing that really stood out to me in that game against the Bucks was just how fucking dominant Unger was in the trenches.
Here's an interesting question.
That dude is incredible.
Here's an interesting question that somebody asked me, you know, because we were talking about somebody asked a question on Twitter tonight. They said, you know, if teams, knowing what we know now, where would Lattimore get picked? And, you know, I think.
Top three.
I think he'd be number two behind Watson. But somebody asked me an interesting question. Knowing what we know now, if you were the Saints and you picked at 11 and you had to just choose between Lattimore or Deshaun Watson. Now, I know Deshaun Watson got hurt, but he was fucking awesome. Dave and Andrew, mm-hmm. Dave, you can go first. What would you do if you knew you could have Deshaun Watson, who might be the next great quarterback in the NFL, or Lattimore? What would you have done at 11 if you were the Saints?
I would have taken Lattimore. I still think it's too early to be looking for Breeze's replacement. I really do think that, you know, look, Tom Brady is setting the standard here. And Tom Brady is, what, a year or two older than Drew? I think if you can build around a guy like Breeze and Brady and build a team around them, I think they can play 41, 42 years old.
So you're thinking you're going to get two more years after this year if you
wanted to pay him, yeah, I think you could. And you build around him. You can't have Breeze and expect him to be 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011 Breeze and throwing 40 balls a game. If you can have a team like you have now and not have to have Breeze, you know, slinging it and winning these games for you like they are this year, I certainly think you can get a few more years out of Breeze, yeah.
Andrew, what would you do, Lattimore or Deshaun Watson?
I agree with Dave for different reasons, so I concur. But for me, it's just... I don't want to live the rest of my life as a Saints fan never seeing what a good corner looks like. So, I mean,
the Saints.
The world is my oyster right now. Like, to actually see the Saints have a corner that's unbelievable is...
He's the best corner we've ever seen.
It's a unicorn. We're literally seeing a Saints unicorn.
Obviously, he's only played 8 games, so you can't say he's the best corner in Saints history, but he's the best corner I've ever seen the Saints have.
Yeah.
By far. Here's the reason I would have taken Lattimore is because Watson, I think, is going to be amazing, and he could give you – you could have 25 years of good quarterbacking if you're lucky, or at least like 8 or 9, right? And you add that to the 12 years of Breeze, you get 21 years of good quarterbacking. But here's the thing. Breeze plus Lattimore might get you another Super Bowl. Watson only gets you like 9 more years of being relevant. And I really want to know the Super Bowl, and that's why I would take Lattimore. Like, Lattimore's that fucking good. Like, Lattimore, by next November, Andrew, he's going to be the best corner in the NFL if he's healthy. I really believe that.
Yeah.
You know? That means basically if you have an elite corner and Cam Jordan, you can fill in the pieces around it and have a mediocre defense. And if you fill in pieces that are really good, Dave, you can fucking have Seattle's defense. You know? So Dave, like, before we wrap up this game and get to the questions and the Twitter questions and the Buffalo game, what was there anything at the Tampa game that stood out to you that you feel like we haven't touched on yet before we jump to next week?
The crowd doing the wave while Vernon Golston was injured. Seriously?
Yeah. Come on, people.
And Thomas Morstead telling the crowd to stop doing the wave.
I didn't see that.
Well, because you weren't on the seat. You don't sit where
Clearly, it wasn't despite the player. It was just...
No, it wasn't, but it was poor timing on Saints fans.
Come on, Saints fans! Know the time and place to do the wave.
Which,
the time and place to do the wave is never, by the way.
Which is about right, because I also have a problem with Saints fans booing the players kneeling, not during the national anthem, before the national anthem.
Did they do that again this week? I heard they didn't.
I didn't get to the game early. I got there right as they were kicking off. But last week they started booing the players before the national anthem when they were kneeling. But then of course the players stand for the national anthem. So why are you booing? The players. All of the Saints players are standing for the national anthem. They are not kneeling for the national anthem. So why are you booing? Are you booing because you don't want them to kneel at all?
They're just choosing to stay angry on principle. You can't justify that with like an intellectual reason.
And that to me, I have a problem with. I have a problem with that. And also,
and you should.
Game time. Yeah, I do. And then game time. Who I sit behind. He's on the lower echelon, I guess I would say, of the Saints super fans. I mean, because he just kind of dresses up in a Saints jersey and paints his face. But you might recognize him if you saw him. But I haven't been seeing him at any of the games this season. And I'm pretty close with the people that we all sit around in my seats. And the person sitting in front of me who sits next to game time, she had texted him to ask him why he hadn't been to any of the games. And so he's boycotting the games because of the whole protesting thing, which I think is ridiculous.
Well, here's my thing about boycotting. If you want to boycott and you're a casual fan, that's fine. But I'm not letting the president or the Saints players or whatever ruin enjoyment of my fall Sundays. Like, I'm just not. Like, I like football too much to like let them
There you go. They love God and America too much to let football get in the way of their love of
and
God.
And that's
America.
Fine. But here's the thing, like if you are booing the Saints before the national anthem and they're kneeling, basically what you're saying is I hate your stupid fucking protest. I want to ignore it. Stop doing it. I don't care if you do it during the anthem, before the anthem, after the game. If you do it, I hate it. I want to ignore it. And that's basically, I mean, you know, that's what it is. I mean, and I was arguing with a ton of people on Twitter. They're like, That's like going to McDonald's and saying and you make your order and they say, "Have you found Jesus? Have you accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior?" I'm like, if they do that to make that McDonald's, I say, "Yes, he has. Yes, I have. Can I have a number two with a large fry and a Coke? Have a lovely day." Like, you know. But anyway.
That was a weird analogy.
That was it was a bad analogy. But I'm on my third beer. I totally butchered that. here's the thing.
You can stick your head up a butcher's ass.
If you take an orange and you slice the orange six ways, and you don't have the orange peel, how can you respect the flag? That's what I'm saying. But here's the thing. Like, do you guys feel – I feel like the Saints, they're obviously on a six-game winning streak, longest winning streak since 2009. But I feel like something's different. I'm not getting as many emails and stuff for my column. I feel like it's not quite what it should be or what I'm expecting the excitement to be. Dave, do you feel that or no?
You know what it is? I think everything, it may be 20 years from now before this fades away, but I think everything the Saints do and every season from here on out, for the foreseeable future is always going to be, graded against 2009. And 2009 was special because they started off 13-0, and you know, it was kind of like really the first, you know, the first time where we all said collectively, "Oh my God, like, they, you know, this could really be it. They could really do something. They, you know, they might win a playoff game. They might win two playoff games. They might win the Super Bowl." So I think in a way we're still
we're still in the honeymoon, like 7 years later, 8 years later.
Yeah, really. And I think we're all still, I think we're kind of still a little jaded. And
come on, you're not saying that Saints fans have turned into LSU fans, have you?
No, but
no, it's actually that.
No, Andrew, I think what he's saying is it's the opposite of LSU fans. Like, LSU fans are bananas and are like, "You gotta go. If you don't beat Bama and you don't win 11 games, we're firing you." Saints fans are like, 2009 was great. It's cool. 7-9, 3 years in a row is cool. 6-10 is like Saints fans. We still have the T-shirts. We still watch the 2009 DVD. It's still awesome. And we're like, if they go 13,
but that's not what Dave was saying.
Yeah,
Dave, you weren't saying that one.
I think our threshold for excitement is that much higher. Is significantly higher.
And like LSU fans.
Yeah, in a way. But yes. In that sense, it is. But we're not as. But we're not as pissy, or we don't expect that. It's not like we expect to go 13-3 every season as Saints fans, just like LSU fans, you know, expect them to go 10-0 or 11-0.
I think
it's just still early in the season, and you know, Carolina and Atlanta are close enough that, you know, the Saints could implode.
Not get it,
and I think fans are still a little gun shy from the 7-9 stuff. So,
maybe.
You know, and I'm sure the whole anthem thing is part of it. You know, I definitely think some fans, you know, have soured. But I think if they continue to win, like it's going to build more and more with each week.
You know,
absolutely.
The more they keep winning, the more people will start to get invested.
You know what?
That's a foregone.
You know what?
You
know what the Saints fan base needs to get super fired up and crazy? They need a game flexed to Sunday night in the dome.
They house Atlanta and everybody will be back.
Or Carolina. Yeah. Although if they flex the Carolina game, I'm fucked. Or I'll have to change my flight to Monday morning because I'm going to that game. I think they're going to flex the Ram game, especially if the Rams and Saints both win, because they'll both be 7-2. I think NBC would flex that game.
I think they're gonna fucking flex that goddamn Christmas Eve game.
God, not again, no.
And I'm gonna be.
Yeah, I'll be pissed.
It's a noon game now. And it's against the Falcons, so certainly it's going to have some sort of
divisional implication. I always do Christmas Eve in Baton Rouge, and we usually we'll do some stuff in Baton Rouge before we do Christmas Day in Baton Rouge, where my wife's parents are from. Yeah. And so the flex last year really sucked.
Yeah, that fucked me.
Yeah.
Right now they're
I just have to stay in New Orleans that much longer, and then I basically right after the game I gotta half drunk hustle back, basically entering a midday state of hangover because I have to stop drinking and head back to Baton Rouge right after the game.
What's a better
right now they're at noon. If they flexed it to 3:15, that would be okay. If they flex it to the night game, to the Sunday night game,
then that's the worst case scenario. Yeah.
Do they even have a Sunday night game?
I think three is the worst case. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they eliminate the Sunday night game.
But don't you go to church at 7, Dave?
No, we go to church at 4. We go to 4 o'clock mass.
So it's right in the middle of mass, right?
Well, I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Did you skip the game last year, or do you stayed for the first quarter or something?
No, I stayed for 15 minutes.
Right.
I went for 15 minutes just to keep my streak of home attendance.
Alive. Gotta keep the streak.
I'm serious, man. I've got since at least 2005, if not 2004. I mean, I've got
13.
What is that?
13.
I got 12-13 years invested.
That's like
in 100.
That's like 100, like a little over 100 straight games, right?
Yeah, up until this year, that included every preseason game.
Well, Dave, you're having a beer with me at Champion Square before the game this year.
On Christmas Eve? Well, it depends on what time the game is.
Here's one last question before a couple more questions, and then we'll get to the preview of Saints Buffalo. Matt asks, Andrew, which jersey do you want first, Kamara or Lattimore?
Oh, Lattimore, for sure.
Yeah.
Kamara is exciting, but we've seen it with Bush and Sproles. It's not unique in this offense. I mean, it's really exciting. Don't get me wrong, but running backs in the Sean Payton offense, it has happened. We have never had a cornerback in the history of the franchise. Like maybe Dave Waymer, but you can count guys. You need a finger or two to basically count the times we've had a guy of his caliber on the team ever.
I don't think. So. So, do we think Atlanta's going to get it together? I feel like I watched that. I thought they would eventually. I don't know, if they're ever going to just get it together, or they're just going to be stuck in neutral and are going to be 8-8, 9-7. Who do you fear most in the South?
You know, it's tough because we haven't played Atlanta yet. I'm a little nervous about Carolina again, I guess. I think that'd probably be who I'm most nervous about.
Andrew?
I mean, they're the closest to us in the standings. I mean, they're only because they've got one extra loss. Are they behind us? So,
Andrew, who do you fear more?
I still fear Atlanta more. I was happy about that result. Because I just feel like Carolina is so up and down. They're going to have some good games, and then, people are going to start saying Cam's for real again. They're going to expect him to beat teams, and they won't.
They put so much on his shoulders. They ask him to run.
And on defense, they go by Kuechly. I mean, he's one concussion away from being done for the year, and, if they don't have Kuechly, it's a very different team. So, I don't know. I just think Carolina to me is a fraud of a 6-3.
Really?
I'm basing that off how they looked against the Saints when they played.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is the Atlanta's advanced stats on their offense say they should be better. And I feel like they're going to
what I'm saying. Atlanta scares me more.
Yeah, but Atlanta has lots of issues on defense though. The thing is, the Saints now are Atlanta's offense will give the Saints trouble because their running backs will eat the Saints linebackers alive. But the Saints new we're going to pound it in down your throat offense is custom built to give Atlanta fucking fits. You know, because Atlanta has trouble stopping the runs. Atlanta gives up more long drives than any team in the league. That's what Carolina did. Carolina just jammed the ball down their throat.
Yeah, and I'm not sure offensively the Falcons would be as successful against the Saints this year.
Yeah.
In fact, I know they wouldn't be because they were unstoppable.
Well, they wouldn't be that, but I think they could still give the Saints they can still give the Saints issues. The Saints defense is now it's now a top 10 defense, by the way. They're ninth in points allowed. And they're 15th in yards, and the only thing the Saints are really bad at is their yards per carry is kind of bad, and their third down is still kind of a mess, but they were better against Tampa. So all right, thanks for the questions, everybody. Dave, Saints go to Buffalo. Saints are a 2-point favorite on the road at the 5-3 Buffalo Bills. Who you got?
I think this is probably going to be one of the toughest games of the season for the Saints. Obviously because it's away. Obviously because Buffalo is a pretty good team. They're a physical team. Mm-hmm. Does anybody know the weather forecast?
Yeah, I looked at it. As of right now, it's like a high of 45 mm-hmm. in Buffalo.
That's a titty bit nipply.
Yeah. The wind didn't seem too bad. They were like saying winds of 9 to 10 miles an hour. And there might be some PM showers, but it didn't say showers during the day. So right now it looks like maybe some precipitation later.
That's not terrible.
Temperature was cold, but not freezing.
That's not terrible, but that's definitely cold. As long as there's no precipitation, snow, rain, whatever.
If Breeze comes out with a glove, you know we're done.
No, now this season he's won with the glove. He's won with the glove.
He did it.
I mean, they're not even giving the Bills the typical 3-point
home,
spread
no.
home advantage there. So, that says something. It's going to be a close game for sure. It's going to be a tough game. But I'm going to go with the Saints. God, I mean, they're on a roll. I don't think the defense seems to play a lot better at home than they do away. So I don't think the defense is going to play as well as they normally have. But I'm going to go, I am going to go 28-24 Saints. MVP. I'm gonna go with. What was Mike Thomas's final stats this week? He had a whole bunch of catches. He had that one drive where it was like the Mike Thomas show. What were his final stats this past week?
Like he had like 8 catches for 65 yards. Yeah, like it wasn't great.
I'm still waiting for him to you know do whatever. But
he had 8 catches for 65 yards. He's projected at 100 catches for 1,100 yards.
1,100 yeah. I know, but I'm gonna
I
be honest with you.
Just,
11,
I think it's been tough for him to have the huge game because I just think. Teams know that he's the only guy they really have.
Yep.
Yeah. 1,100 yards it would be disappointing, I think, from like.
Well,
Thomas
for 100 catches, yeah, it would be. Yeah. 11 yards of catches, kind of.
Yeah. He's making like Lance Moore catches. He's not making Devin Henderson
catches. Well, it's because to get him the ball, they're having to do a lot of those screens and dump offs right at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
MVP. I'm going to go with Ted Ginn.
Ted Ginn. Yeah. Nolan, old man Ginn. Old man Ginn's having pace to have a career year. And he would have caught that 80.
Yeah.
If Breeze would have hit him, he would have had 87 more yards added to his total from Sunday. Andrew, who you got Sunday?
You know, I'm going to say Bills 24-20. I think the 6-game win streak has been incredible, but it's not going to last forever. And, first of all, there's a couple things. The Bills are coming off a horrendous performance on Thursday night against the Jets. They have 10 days to prepare. They're pissed off. They're playing at home. you know, Saints in colder weather traditionally have not done great. And I just think it's going to be a tough physical game. I don't think the Saints will have Kenny Vaccaro. I don't think they'll have Armstead. And, you know, I think they'll miss those guys. And, you know, McCoy, Tyrod Taylor is a tough guy to defend. You know, I think they'll cover their receivers pretty well. But
their receivers, you know, are garbage. They're 30th in the league.
I think, Tyrod Taylor will get some scrambles and stuff.
But their receivers are garbage. That's why they traded for Calvin Benjamin.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So at the end of the day, I just think the Bills are going to outplay the Saints, and Saints aren't going to look great on offense, especially in that weather. In a hostile environment. So I'm going to say Bills 24-20. And listen, it's okay. You know, Saints, I don't mind losing on the road to an AFC team. I just don't think it hurts you that much in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, that's the best loss you can take.
Yeah, yeah. So, as far as my Saints player of the game, I'll go with Mike Thomas. I think, you know, the Saints will be down. They'll have to throw a lot. Maybe Breeze doesn't look great, but I think this is the first time Thomas goes over 100 yards this year.
Man, I was all set to agree with you, Andrew, but I look at Buffalo, and their pass defense is awful. They're 25th. They live off turnovers. Their pass offense is terrible.
The Saints have been in a giving mood lately.
They have been. But, I mean, that's eventually going to end, though. You know, like, the Saints are eventually going to have a game where they don't have turnovers. I feel like Buffalo is living on borrowed time in a sense of they're living off of turnovers and good red zone defense, which good red zone defense is kind of – it's a lot based on luck. It's not a, it's not a sustainable thing. I think this is going to be a nasty, mucky game where Buffalo's going to get it exactly like they want it. But the Saints are going to win anyway. And the Saints are going to win 20-17. And it's going to be not really pleasant to watch at points. But Kamara is going to hit a long run. And the Saints are going to win 20-17 and get to 7-2. And he's going to be your MVP. And I mean, it just like maybe I'm – I just really believe that this Saints secondary, like if you don't have – at least above average wide receivers and backs that can catch the ball, like they're going to shut you down. You know, I think that's a fair thing to say now after watching them for 8 weeks. And I just think Buffalo, they just don't have the guys. So the Buffalo probably win 35-7, but anyway, I'm taking the Saints 20-7.
I mean, if there's a game where Willie Snead is going to do something. I mean, this feels like this could be the one.
Willie Snead need like Willie's Dave Angie, either one of you can jump in. I feel like Willie Snead is
something's wrong.
Like he is at the point where like the Saints might not tender him for next year. Like that is a legit possibility, which at the beginning of the year you'd have thought that was crazy. You'd think they'd at least tender him the second round pick. Like, Dave, like, I could see him maybe not being on the Saints. I mean, like, it's possible that he's not on the Saints next year.
Wait, who? I don't think...
Snead.
Yeah, no, I think he's... Yeah, this might be his last year.
We also forgot... Speaking of that, we forgot about Delvin Bro had a setback. I totally forgot about that out the top.
Oh, shocker. Shocker. Real shocker. So Delvin Bro, I don't think is ever going to play for the Saints ever again.
Andrew, do you agree with that?
Yes.
I mean...
And by the way, just Ralph, before you sign off, I have a few points about the tight end about Kobe Fleener.
Okay, go.
In 2016. No. You finish up and we'll end with me.
Okay. Well, I'm done, so go ahead. Fire away. Oh, okay. Fire away.
Let's have a conversation, boys. Let's have a little chat. Okay. 2016 free agency. That was when Kobe Fleener was signed by the Saints. That was the year after Ben Watson had a career year, 800 yards, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Kobe Fleener was given a 5-year deal for $36 million, which is $7.2 million a year. Okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ladarius Green was signed by the Steelers for 4 years, $20 million. That was $5 million.
Yeah.
Antonio Gates was
re-signed. Yeah, but look at his size. Look at his stats.
Zach Miller was re-signed by the Bears for 2 years, $6 million. So he got $3 million a year.
Yeah, but look at his stats.
Jermaine Gresham. What do you mean, look at his stats? Let me tell you something. We're not signing somebody. We don't get those stats that he already put from the past. We only get the stats that from that point forward.
Jermaine Gresham's an interesting one.
Jermaine Gresham was re-signed by the Cardinals for a year. I don't have the contract stats on that. Jared Cook was signed by the Packers for 1 year for $4 million. I don't know if you're noticing this, but all these things are not $7.2 million.
But none of those guys you just named produced.
Vance McDonald, Ben Watson got $4 million a year after coming off of a career year.
McDonald,
800-yard season.
But he was much older.
But McDonald got $6.3 million, and he was younger and didn't have as many catches. So, like,
and how did he? And how has his career been since
He's garbage.
How much did Gresham get?
Gresham got a 1 year deal from Arizona, but he signed an extension last year. I'll pull it up.
Mercedes Lewis was signed 3 years, $12 million. So that was $4 million a year. So the Saints paid $7.2 million. They paid way above and beyond per year what every other tight end in free agency that offseason.
But that's the point. He was the best one.
No, he wasn't. Obviously,
Fleener was better than all those guys.
Obviously, he fucking wasn't the best one. Because what the fuck has he done since the fucking Saints have signed him? The fucking Saints who made Jimmy Graham a fucking all-star. Fucking pro bowler.
Fleener did more than all those guys you just named.
Gresham got 4 years, $28 million.
Andrew, he did do more.
Yes.
But if the Saints can't fucking make him good, then he's fucking garbage and he's useless.
That's fair.
I mean, the argument...
My point here is he did get market rate, because if you look at his production, he was...
He didn't get market rate. The only person in his category was Vance McDonald. Everybody else was was nowhere near $7.2 million a year.
But Ralph, who did you just say got 4 years, $28 million?
Gresham. He got it last year.
Yeah.
Like Kobe Fleener... Kobe Fleener is the 11th highest paid tight end.
And Gresham is the same thing as Fleener. They have the same numbers.
Fleener's actually is a little bit better.
Yeah.
I mean, $7 million is not like a ridiculous overpay. The argument that Dave is making is the correct one, though, is the Saints didn't have to pay the going rate for a tight end. They can create one. And they could have got 50.
Oh, that I completely agree with. I'm not disputing that at all.
I mean, Josh Hill is higher on the fucking depth chart than Kobe Miller is. How much are they paying Josh Hill? Certainly not $7.2 million a year.
Josh Hill.
Yes, sir.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want Fleener on this team, and I don't want his contract. But I don't think in the landscape of what he's worth based on the market and based on what he produced in Indianapolis – That's the going rate for a guy that puts up stats like
Josh
that.
Josh Hill is the 38th highest paid tight end. He makes $2.3 million. He makes a third of what Fleener makes, and he's going to, I think, well, we'll see if he ends up with more catches. But
I wish I could look up, I'd have to do really some in-depth. I can't do it on my phone, but I'd like to know when they were signed, because how early in free agency was Fleener signed?
Very early.
Second or third day, yeah.
Okay.
Like the Saints, they like Fleener was a bad investment, but I don't look at Fleener as a like there's so many more other things that the Saints did were so much more terrible, like the Gillette contract, the Brandon Browner contract, you know, I don't get the
Gillette contract. Every time I think about the Gillette contract, it reminds me of how the Mets are still paying Bobby Bonilla $1.5 million a year until 2020, even though Bobby Bonilla retired 15 fucking years ago.
I mean, Dave, just to give you an example, like Charles Clay of the Bills, he caught 57 balls last year. He caught 51 the year before, and he's making $7.6 million a year. He's the sixth highest paid tight end in football.
That's fine, but he's catching those balls. Fleener isn't going to catch 51 passes.
Yeah, but Fleener caught, what, 50 last year, Ralph?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm just saying, like, Charles Clay,
I don't like it.
Dwayne Allen of the Patriots makes more. He makes $7.3 million. How many? What's the most Dwayne Allen's ever caught?
He's caught 50, I think.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I mean, there's a lot. When you catch 50 balls, you make $70 million. That's
$7 million. Yeah, like
that's the market says. No.
By the way, Ralph, I know Ralph.
Dwayne Allen has never. Dave, Dwayne Allen caught 35 balls last year, and he makes more than Kobe Fleener. He makes $7.3 million.
Well, yeah. Well, then they're overpaying for him too.
Well, Dave, you're the guy arguing about the price of the movie theater. That it's you're saying I hate that it cost me $10 to get into the movie theater. Well, tough shit. That's what it costs to get into the movie theater. Like $7 million is the going rate for a mediocre tight end.
Dave, if you want to pay
$5 million, I'm the guy that's complaining about paying $10 to go to the movie theater when I have my own fucking home theater system at home, and I'll just fucking wait for the goddamn Blu-ray to come out and watch it for $3.99 on fucking Netflix.
But that's Dave, if you want to pay $5 instead of
$7
million,
because I can sit by myself and I don't have to listen to people talking and cell phones ringing through the preview.
Dave, if you want to pay $5 instead of $7 million a year, these are the tight ends you get. Vernon Davis, Jared Cook, Rhett Ellison, Brent Celek, Mercedes Lewis.
Brent Celek? He's having a great year.
Is he?
Yeah. On the Eagles?
Let's see. I feel like he's not.
Doesn't he have like 20 touchdowns?
The Eagles are putting up a lot of stats this year.
Look up how many touchdowns Celek has.
Brent Celek has 7 catches this year, less than Fleener.
Yeah.
Okay, but how many touchdowns does Brett Celek have?
Zero.
None.
Who am I thinking of? Is he on the Eagles?
You're thinking of Ernst.
Yeah.
Yes, Zach Ernst.
Oh no. Well, Zach Ernst makes a lot more than Fleener.
Well, okay, he deserves it. Jesus Christ.
I'm just saying. You look at these numbers. Like he's kind of getting market value.
He makes eight. Zach Ernst makes $8.5 million.
He's worth it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna have to put this in the rundown that we Dave lost his shit over the Kobe Fleener contract. I hope
two years later.
I hope Kobe Fleener.
You know what? Looking at this list makes me realize there's not a lot of good receiving tight ends in the league.
No, there's not.
There's about seven or eight of them, and that's it.
Jimmy Graham was a fucking anomaly from back in the day when he was with the
Well, Gronk,
I would argue there's
Gronk,
probably about four.
I would argue he was a wide receiver.
I would argue there's about four good tight ends.
Travis Kelce's a beast.
Jordan Reed's always hurt though. So
yeah, Greg Olsen is great.
I can't believe I just got Brent Celek and Zach Ertz confused.
Tom Celek?
Tom Celek. One's with an S, one's with a C.
All right. That'll wrap up.
Wrap it up.
And by the way, Ralph, I know you're a big PFF guy. Kobe Fleener was like fourth or fifth on PFF's free agent 2016 free agency tight end list. So he was behind Watson and a whole bunch of other guys.
Yeah. No, I'm not arguing with you that he was a bad signing. I'm just saying, like, that's the going rate for a mediocre tight end.
But that was my argument. I really thought that they had overpaid him, regardless of just for free agent tight ends in 2016. My initial argument was that I think they still paid him too much.
Well, see, that's where I disagree. They didn't pay him too much. Because that's what you have to pay to get a guy that produces at that level. But I don't think they should have signed him. Yeah, I think they should have just drafted a guy and hoped to develop him or something.
Andrew was driving in the car and called me and told me what they gave Kobe Fleener, and I nearly wrecked my car. So I was like,
I remember you saying, they did what?
They did what? They fucking, for how much? 30 what?
Does the Andrew call you every day on your drive home to give you a recap of the day's NFL news?
You talk on the phone.
You guys are adorable. You guys are fucking adorable.
Especially on Monday. We have to like...
You see each other like two times a year.
Yes.
But you're like besties.
We're besties. Mm-hmm. We're
it's
besties.
Adorable. It's fucking adorable.
Thousands of miles
I love
away.
It. We're I love besties. You guys.
Love you too, Dave.
So for Dave, for Kevin who's hiking, for Andrew... until next
for Dave at the train station.
Yeah, until next
that's
week.
That's a streetcar.
Train.
It's very New Orleans. We're giving you some real authentic New Orleans sounds here on the podcast.
Streetcar right sounds better bend. Than streetcar sound better than cat. So until next week.
Oh yeah, that's right. I realized. No cat. Your wife didn't come home to feed the cat today.
No.
I can give you guys some authentic Charlottesville sounds with the Nazi protests outside if you want.
Tiki torches are sold out. So until next week, the bar is closed.